Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. From pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Furniture shopping can be overwhelming. There are so many options, and it's hard to know what's actually worth it. That's why I always turn to reviews to guide my decisions. If something has hundreds of five-star reviews, I'm paying attention. And Bob's Discount Furniture has tons of highly rated pieces that make choosing a whole lot easier. Like their Elm dining set, which has over 700 five-star reviews. It's a gorgeous setup with a real marble table and comfortable Bobapedic seating that instantly upgrades your dining space. And at $9.99, it's a super approachable way to get that high-end look. Or check out Bob's Copper Radiance Queen Extra Firm Mattress. Over 400 five-star reviews and recommended by Consumer Reports. It's designed with a copper-infused cover and high-density Bobapedic foam for support. Plus, it comes with a 20-year warranty. And if you're looking for a sofa upgrade, the Modular Bob Sectional is a customer favorite with over 1,000 five-star reviews. It's got soft, durable upholstery, storage, wireless charging, and starts at just $250 per piece, so you can customize it without overthinking it. For quality furniture and everyday low prices, shop at Bob's. It's where America shops for furniture.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game, and head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day, just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And yesterday, we got reintroduced to Dennis Schroeder, had his opening media availability with the Lakers after some visa issues. And Mike, there's part of it that caught your attention. Talk to us.
Well, the whole vibe around Dennis Schroeder coming in and has to do with Darvin Ham. And I think that it's hard to underscore the importance of this type of relationship in certain situations. Sometimes it doesn't matter at all. Sometimes it matters a lot. But there is with a player like Dennis, like there's a huge background of trust between these two, who probably were together more than people realize, like for 5 years in Atlanta, when, you know, the start of Schroeder's career. And so Schroeder started out by talking about how he has unfinished business. And, you know, that was when he was last time that he was here. And we've gone over all that before. I really liked how he played, especially early in the season. Once he got, in Darius' terminology, slotted upwards when all the injuries happened, that was not a burden that he was able to carry as well. But he had some really good moments when he was just the guy that was supposed to be the pest up and down the floor and occasionally creating weak side offense. But the point, to get back to the main point, so Geeter asked him about Darvin Ham, and he said, that was the main reason, to be honest, that he was here. I've been with him since 2013 when I was drafted. He's been nothing but great to me, learning from him over the years, staying in touch. He went on to say that he calls him family, and there's a real bond there. And I think that you're going to, the basic point that I want to make out of that is that sometimes that matters, sometimes it doesn't. But in this case, I think it ensures that you're going to get the absolute best that Schroeder has to offer in terms of effort, in terms of energy, in terms of role. There was none of the I expect to start, which was the whole thing last time Schroeder was here. When he came in, there was sort of like, I trust that Darvin knows me. He knows what I do on defense. He knows what I do on offense. And therefore, I trust, because I know he has my best interest in mind, I trust that he's going to use me accordingly. And I don't know, Darius, it's not like I've never heard that before, but it just stood out to me in the context of that. It wasn't the easiest last season at Boston for Schroeder. The ending in LA wasn't the easiest, and the whole contract thing that he got into. But that was just to have him say it like that and mean it, and then have Darvin back it up saying the same thing, I thought was significant.
I thought it was too. They both talked about just that bond, right? And I think it was Darvin who was, it might've been Darvin who was saying this, but that he was, Dennis was his rookie. Like, he was the guy who was with him all of the time. Like, he was the one who was like doing player development stuff with him, right? And so ask any pro who their first PD guy was, right? And if that's the guy who typically sticks with them, and those guys end up being guys who do have a relationship with them throughout their entire NBA career, right? It's especially if they're a good coach and you form that good bond. So, A, I think you're right with that. I also think, like, the vibe I got from Dennis was just a certain amount of what's the word I'm looking for? He was both honest and he was forthright, but he also had that smirk of like, I'm ready to get after it. Right. So he got asked about playing with Russ, and he was also, Mike, very complimentary of his time in OKC and the season that he spent playing with Russ. And Russ is my guy, and he's helped me so much on and off of the court. And so if it's all about the vibes, I thought Dennis had some good vibes going yesterday, and he does seem ready to compete right now, Mike.
Let me redirect this to Pete if I can. So when the move happened, right, and we all heard about it and Schroeder was coming in, the first question was kind of, well, the way things ended, and I'm not sure with LeBron and AD and the fit, and they've already got a lot of guards and all that. But Pete, after hearing Darvin and after hearing Dennis, and we've heard Rob Pelinka say before that he spends some time with Darvin as they look up and down and see what players are available, that's starting to make more and more sense to me, right? And I just wondered if you got that sense as well, and if it also is another guy that fits into the style that we've seen, right, from Darvin so far. So I've come a certain way having just this brief, like the brief information that we have. And I wondered how that struck you.
It's funny how the slotting that Darius always talks about can impact your perception of a player in terms of like how favorably or unfavorably you look at them. Because when he was supposed to be our third guy and he didn't come up particularly big in the Phoenix series when we needed him to step up into being our second guy, I remember being at the end of the first Dennis Schroeder experience, like, yeah, I'm fine if that guy goes, maybe we can retain him for a MLE or something like that. But like, I was fine with him being out. But that relationship between Darvin and him, and that trust that you opened with, Mike, and then that stylistic match with the roster that we have and so much money being tied up in three players, with that, one of the things that we need amongst the other guys is we need to take some flyers, right? And Dennis Schroeder is not an vet minimum talent, if that makes sense. He's someone that I think a lot of the dynamics that we've talked about so far has come into play in terms of teams deciding, yeah, I want to have him here or I don't. And that, like, if that is something that's in a good place, Pelinka brought up Dwight Howard as an example of this one. We signed Dwight in 2020 because Dwight was a similar player. And we talked about this at the time, that Dwight was not out of the league because he couldn't play basketball. It was for other reasons. And at some point, your basketball talent decreases to a point where it's like it's not worth the other stuff. And that's how guys like that end up out of the league. But Dennis is a good player and he's not a vet minimum talent. And so having those kind of guards, like AD was talking about this yesterday, that ability to pick up all over the floor, and just, we have an embarrassment of riches in terms of depth at the guard spot. And so I see just a lot of synergy. That's been one of the themes of this preseason, is the talent and the personalities match the coach and the coach's scheme. And Dennis Schroeder, I think, is going to be a good example of that.
Well, Mike, this portends well with what we were talking yesterday, right? Which was AD at, and the last 2 days actually, is AD at the five, and the how you make that work and why you actually go in that direction. And it's because of having better and deeper perimeter talent than maybe you do at the center position, right? Where AD is your best big and LeBron can always scale up to power forward. And what are your thoughts then about Dennis and where he can fit best and how he then works his way on to the court and how big his role could feasibly be? You talked the last pod about how hard the guys are playing and to the level of success that the team has had, just in terms of holding leads and hanging in there, even without all of their guys available. One of the benefits of not having all of the guys available is that guys have gotten extended run. Right? Like when you don't have the full team, it's just like, hey, well, Austin, you could go out there and play 25 or 30 minutes. Oh, Lonnie Walker, go knock the rust off and get a 25 minute night or a 30 minute night, right? Like play as much as you want because there's minutes out there to be had. But well, as things shift back and Russ is going to be back in the lineup and Pat Bev is going to be back in the lineup, and now Dennis is actually here after not being here for a week, do you think he has a firm role going into things because of his relationship with Darvin, and Darvin knows me and he knows what I can do? Does that feel like an on-ramp for him, or do you think it's still more prove it the way that almost everyone else has had to sort of prove it coming into the preseason and throughout training camp?
Yeah, it might take a little bit just because of all the guys that have already been playing, and we've talked about the guards and the lack of wings, but eventually, and whether that's a week or a month or at some point of the season, to me, there's no way that Dennis isn't some part of the rotation. And like he'll find a way to get those minutes. And I still, in a perfect world, as you guys know, I would rather have some bigger wings and you be able to use that size defensively to weigh on teams and have some of those guys that ideally can shoot a little bit. But having listened for many pods about some of Pete's theories and multiple ball handlers and, you know, getting up and down the floor and energy. And this team is really fitting into that in such
I'm
a
so
different
happy,
way.
Mike. I feel like the basketball gods
from last year,
I feel like the basketball gods are smiling on me and giving me everything that I wanted to see stylistically from last year's team.
Yeah. And Pete, and they owe you too, because growing up a Laker fan must have been
I
real
know,
tough,
yeah,
right?
Just I really, mean, just, it's been tough, and it's just nice to catch a break from them, Mike.
Exactly. Oh man,
a whole five postseason losses that 1 year, Mike. Like, yeah. Oh my goodness,
it's been
right?
Tough.
Growing up a Lakers fan, right? Like, oh, another Game 7 win. Ah, oh.
Not only that, like the fact that they lost Game 1 to Philly to ruin the perfect postseason, that was messed up. And that team should have been undefeated.
Should have. And I feel like, you know, hopefully there's some payback for that down the line, that we get that back. Yeah.
So to get back to Schroeder, I think that the way that he plays, Anthony Davis talked about this. He essentially said it's hard to dribble with him and Pat Bev on the floor. And I'm just thinking about what a pain in the ass it's going to be to play this version of the Laker team where, so in the current starting lineup, you got Russell Westbrook out there and feeling empowered and, you know, talking and running and doing his things. And this is putting Russ in the perfect world, right? Saying that he's doing all this stuff. You got Pat Bev out there harassing you. Let's say that you get through and you got Austin Reeves just trying hard everywhere, being smart, taking charges, doing all this. Then let's say you get past that first line of defense and then there's Anthony Davis. Maybe LeBron is more engaged on that end because he sees everybody else going crazy out there. Then, okay, well, that's fine. Then you come in off the bench. Dennis Schroeder comes in and resumes the harassing all the way up the floor. And I think it was it AD that was, he said something about 94 feet about Schroeder and then said, oh, well, I know Pat Bev is Mr. 94 feet, but you know, they can both do it. So you got him coming in to do it. You got Lonnie Walker, who is talking about nothing but defensing. The offense is going to come, you know, this is where I got to really get on the court. You got him. He's athletic as hell and he's running around. And so on and on, like that is a team that is not typical to play against. It's going to require a certain type of a scouting report. And there are ways to take advantage. And this is, again, where I mentioned some of the size, especially on the wing. But that in a regular season, especially, I think is going to be tougher to handle than at this point. I think the rest of the kind of NBA community, whether on podcast or Twitter or even some of the teams, I'm not sure if they're going to expect exactly what that could be. That's at the optimist view of it. And that part, I think, is kind of exciting because there's a lot of guys there, Pete, that are just kind of nasty type competitors. And the ratio that was there last year for that kind of guy is very, very different.
Mike, I remember so many circumstances where Russ was clearly the guy who should have been guarding whoever needed to be guarded on the other team. Just when you looked around and it was like Malik as the other guard or Wayne Ellington, right? And this year, it's just so far away from that. You know how much I love ball pressure guards. That's something that's one of my favorite aspects of basketball. And we have a ton of that. I too would like a forward, and I would love to get more into the wing conversation in another pod. Cause that's something that you guys especially have been really adamant on. I'd love to see how you see that manifesting itself.
Well, but that is one thing though, like JTA and Wenyan though, that is one thing that they do have that energy too. And
that was going to be one of my counterpoints in that discussion is that, like, if you don't have quality forwards, at least if I had to pick between defense or offense, give me guys that play defense, that play hard. And both JT and Wenyan, like, I'd rather they were our fourth and fifth forwards rather than our third and fourth forwards. But you can get by. They can be part of a bigger thing where, even though I'd ultimately like a forward that has a bit of a higher, you know, 3-and-D level type of player, a little more skill to their game. But yeah, this is a squad that I'm excited to watch on the defensive end. And I totally agree with your point, Mike, that we're going to be unconventional enough to be a difficult team to play during the regular season.
So I love the optimism. I love the idea of, like, this is what they can be at the best version of themselves. And I see the path towards that. I really do, because I have been impressed with, and I texted you guys this during the Warriors game. It's just like, oh, the Lakers were up again at the end of the first quarter. And I think Mike corrected me that they had actually trailed it maybe what at the end of one of the first quarters during one of the other games. But they've been in every single one of these games during the competitive portion of the games where both teams were trying with their best players on the court. The Lakers have not been blown out of the water once in the portion of the game where you saw rotation level guys.
I mean, they've won all of those minutes in every game collectively. They've won those portions of the game.
And so I see the path to what you guys are discussing. One of the things that I'm interested in talking about more, though, is how you stay on that path. And one of the ways you do that is through buy-in. So I want to talk about that on the other side of the break. So 94 feet, Pat Bev, 94 feet, Dennis Schroeder. Oh, look, there's Russell Westbrook. Oh, look, there's this guy and that guy and Austin Reeves and Lonnie Walker and all, right? Like name after name after name. And it's going to be difficult to play all of these guys in the role in which they're going to want to play and the role that they're competing for right now. And so if there was a graph, there is a point in time where your give a damn meets up with the role that you're like seeking this out and the role that you get, right? And that is the optimal performance part of the graph. It is like, I have been told that if I do this, I will be rewarded with that. And once you, and I'm wondering, is every player has a different point in their mind in which they think that they are getting the thing that they have been told that they would get if they did the thing that they were asked to do. The numbers game in this backcourt are going to make it extremely tricky for all of these guys to play the role in which they envision for themselves over the course of a full season, assuming relatively good health for everyone, right? And so I'm just going to pose it back to you. How much do you, either of you, see that being a challenge and a hurdle for this team to keep guys engaged and competing defensively, considering that they may not actually be rewarded with the thing that they're seeking by competing and playing hard defensively?
I think it's a fair setup to the question. My instinct while you were laying it out is almost to go the other way on it, because I think that Darvin Ham has this certain way about him that he's kind of tough to argue with, because he's going to lay out the scenario. He's going to tell you what he needs, but he's also going to be supportive, and then he's also going to be firm, and then he's huge. And I don't know, there's something about him, genuinely, that I think these guys feel. And that was it's why we started this pod by me mentioning Schroeder, and he just trusts Darvin. Now, that doesn't mean that it goes forever. Like, if by game 70, he's getting no minutes and Darvin's like, hey, come here, you're my guy, you know? So, but I think that honestly, I think that Frank Vogel was better at parts mm-hmm. of this than people gave him credit for. He was better at keeping the whole roster engaged, you know, trusting guys, finding ways to get guys minutes. Sometimes you play 11 guys. Sometimes you might play 12. And I don't usually like that, especially in a playoff situation where you sort of have to pick some by the end of the season. And sometimes, Pete, that stuff gets handled by one yep. or two injuries, and then you're down to the rotation. But I think that this system, and this is where I want to kick it to Pete, this might portend to, instead of playing two of those guys, just having them be like the bench guard that plays 26 minutes, maybe you play 120 and the other 10 on one night in a matchup, and then the other plays 20 and the other plays 10, and you monitor that and you talk to those guys and you make sure that they're – and that, to me, that seems like something that Darvin is going to do well with. But we, of course, do need to see it first.
Yeah, and it's certainly a balancing act. Now, if we start AD at the five and we go three guards in the backcourt, that bumps in a conventional rotation. That bumps up. Normally, you can only play four guards. That bumps it up to five. Now, we have six. In no particular order, you've got Russ, Austin, Pat Bev, Lonnie, Dennis, and Nunn. That's six guys right there. And so there are going to be a decent number of nights over the course of 82 where somebody's hurt, they've got a nagging ankle injury, something like that, and that will resolve itself. The seventh guy is also Max Christie, who I feel totally comfortable with at least playing defense on bench units, right? But he has no expectation of playing. But the other guys, I think Darius's question is totally spot on, and that idea of like, yeah, we could say that now that Darvin is very authoritative and that he's got everyone rowing in the same direction and buying in and all of that. That's great. It is October. It's mid-October as we record this. And what does that look like if you're out of the rotation? Like, Lonnie Walker's been talking defense and has actually played defense in the first two games that he's been involved in, but that's not something that he's historically done. It's something that's obviously very much on front of mind, because I would guess that he was told, like, if you want minutes, you got to be able to do this. But there's a very realistic possibility that Lonnie or Dennis, like, one of those guys aren't going to be able to play out of those six. And they've done everything that they need to do. But it's also, to Mike's point, I think a little bit as well, in that there's some degree of natural competition in that, like, Kendrick Nunn has played so well that right now we wouldn't even discuss as him being one of the guys that could be that sixth guy, because he's shown it on the court. And so in some ways, this is a problem that resolves itself. But by the time you get to the season, like, it's going to be tricky. I definitely understand the setup for your question.
Yeah, that whole idea of good problems, like, I'm with that, sure. But problems are problems. And ultimately, they do need to be solved. And I think there are natural resolutions. There are, like, oh, this guy is sitting out, it's a rest day. We've talked before about Pat Bev's durability, for example. And he's talked about that. I heard him talking on Draymond Green's podcast recently that the style of game that he plays lends mm-hmm. itself to getting, like, dinged up. and missing some time every now and then, right? Because he is a he is such a get after it guy, and he knows the only reason why he's in the league is because he does play that hard, and he does sort of walk that line of physicality in all instances. He does defend up so often that it's just like it makes sense that he's not going to play 60 games or 70 games, but there's just numbers that he doesn't reach, right? And so some of this will be naturally resolved. I think, to play devil's advocate for my own point, the idea of it is that you keep getting guys to compete at their highest level because once they stop, the other guy is still there doing it. And it's just like, it's the reason why a lot of times people run their personal bests in races, like when they're running in an actual race, rather than when they're out there just training by themselves, right? And it's because the people who are behind you and the people who are in front of you, they are your pace cars. They are the people that are pushing you forward, and they are the people who you are chasing from behind in order to try to catch up, because you want the thing that they have. And so that's the counter to my own question, but I still do think it is something that's going to need to be managed. And I'm keeping my eye on this, Mike.
Well, this is also how humans, you know, build cities and like build planes. You also need some pressure. And like, I thought of it in the context of, you know, trying to lift as a team or something. And if you're going to get those last couple reps and really gain muscle, then you actually need a spotter. Because otherwise, on your last couple of reps, you'll just drop the weight on your chest. And so you need somebody else to drive it and literally lift it up in order for you to get that gain. And that is the shape of what they have on the roster now towards the system that Pete has talked about, and certainly Darvin leading the way and bringing a lot of what they had in Milwaukee in. But it's different from that because of all of the stuff that we talked about as a weakness in the offseason. I think Darvin is trying to pull strength out of it, and we're going to now see what the flaws are, but it's almost like leaning into a certain way to play. And I still think that they can make one trade and get one wing, and all of a sudden then you're in real business. Cause you can go either way. You can go to a little bit more of a traditional style if you need, but in the meantime, let's say that you're a pressure guard, or, you know, knocking on wood, but, you know, Pat Bev doesn't play every game in a season, right? He's always going to miss some time. And then guess you just plug Shooter in. Now, not in terms of with that starting lineup, because you can't, that's too small then, probably, right? If Bev is going to slide up in defensive wings, but I don't know, maybe like Shooter, he really can approximate that defensive pressure, at least that Beverly has, minus a bit of the size and strength. But Shooter will battle you. I kind of remember even him switched on to big sometimes and just sort of like in at the knees and swiping, and he's got long arms. So I don't know. I am feeling more optimistic, Pete, in the sense of what should be expected, because it's making sense to me as I go there every day and I listen to everybody in the sort of conglomeration of what the plan is this year.
Yeah, it's cohesive. It matches the talent that we have, and that doesn't, under the current roster construction, I don't think there's a way to get to a title team with this roster, but I think my goal has been to be a trade away, especially by the time we reach the deadline. And we've taken steps in that direction. It's all very early. Haven't played a real game yet. But I wanted to bring the attention back to Dennis's game offensively in particular. Very famously, as Dennis was heading out the door, one of the stats was he only had one lob to AD over the course of the season. Now, AD missed a bunch of games. Certainly that first stretch of the season, which is where Dennis and AD played the majority of their games together, that he didn't have. AD wasn't exactly rolling to the basket a ton, right? He was very much ramping up to start that season. All of that. That said, there was a certain degree of clunkiness that I'm curious how much this style of play resolves. I think back to the team in the bubble that Dennis was on. He was on the OKC team with Chris Paul, who had just been traded for Russ. Dennis had played with Russ the year before, and Mike was spoke to that earlier. But that was a team that was closing with three guards oftentimes, and they had the best net rating in the league. I remember it was Gallinari was the fourth guy, and I don't remember who the fifth guy was, but it was a small ball group with three guards. And I'm super curious to see how that looks. So Dennis, the player offensively, talk to me about him, D, and about like what he brings to the table now that you've gotten a look at all of the rest of the team.
Well, I think a lot of this comes down to his fit within the system versus what he was asked to do and the alignments of players and the alignment within the scheme that the team played with under Frank Vogel, right? This sort of four-out system with very, very firm spacing ideas. And like it goes back to some of the stuff that we talked about the Lakers first started camp and the boxes that they've put on the court and where guys should be standing and simple things like that. And the idea of dribble handoffs and like multiple screens and flipping screening angles. This is all stuff that Dennis can really, it's going to play to his strengths, I think, as a driving and as a slashing player. And in Frank's system, he got so many of his drives against switches, right? Because teams were switching against him and switching against AD because when they were going under, AD would often rescreen a lot or whoever the big was would rescreen a lot. And then it would trigger the ability for Dennis to isolate, right? And so he was isolating at the top of the floor in one guard fronts in a very similar way to how LeBron was isolating. And I think that these two gap driving systems, the driving lanes that this system incorporates, is going to be so much better for Dennis as an offensive player. And that four out style, the stuff that you mentioned in terms of those lineups with OKC, Pete, I would imagine the fifth guy was going to be like Steven Adams a lot of times as like a screener and a defender and a rebounder. Well, okay, play that sort of style. And instead of Gallinari, it's LeBron James. And instead of Steven Adams, it's Anthony Davis. And think about what your driving lanes are going to look like then if you're playing a similar four out style offense with a two guard front, because that's the sort of system that OKC would play. It would be Dennis up high with Chris Paul, it'd be SGA in one of the corners, it'd be Gallo in one of the corners, and it'd be Steven Adams shifting between the dunker spots and coming up and setting ball screens. And those are the sorts of sets and actions that if you run those now with the Lakers, you're going to get much better looks. If it's like Pat Bev in the corner, LeBron as one of the guys that's up high, AD in maybe in one of the corners or one of the guys that's in the dunker spot, and then the other guard is maybe Austin Reeves. And it's just like, oh, okay, well, we could do something with this, right? And so I envision that a lot of the things I did not like about Dennis, that they'll be mitigated a little bit more because his decision making is going to be much cleaner within the context of this system versus what the asks were under Frank Vogel and in Frank's system, in which Dennis did play well. He just didn't. There was a certain ceiling that he had on his game because of the decision making asks that he was put into as a lead guard within that sort of style.
It's a great point, and it's one that I wanted to get to earlier, so Darius gets the credit for it. But just thinking of him next to Shea and next to Chris and how that gave defenses problems in contrast to when he was in Boston and how Boston wanted to play largely more through Tatum or on occasion Brown, not as much of a flow offense, right? And sort of when he was given the ball at the top of the key and then he's got these two big wings and he's just still, it's like, oh, go to work. Well, that's not really what, it just was never a fit in that context. But Pete, I wanted to get a thought from you. How much have you done any spreadsheet work yet in thinking about where Dennis best finds his minutes? Because I'm curious what your initial thoughts are on when and where to use him and what groups you would like to see him in the most.
Yeah, I'm going back and forth between that end of the first quarter, the wraparound, or to start the second quarter. I think he's more likely to start the second and fourth quarters and help run those groups where I think those AD lineups where LeBron is off of the floor in particular. I'm still figuring out the rotation. It's like the substitution pattern that Darvin has had. He plays players shorter shifts, which I really like because he's asking like defend, defend, defend. And now guys are coming out at the 8 minute mark. Remember, AD was playing full first quarters, right? And so I don't have it handled yet.
Yeah. Look, the coaches need you to figure it out now so that they can employ it. Okay.
Not at all.
He's like,
not
I'm at still all. Figuring it out. So Pete, like, you know, we got to have it in place for Wednesday's game.
So, I got mine figured out. He comes in at the beginning of the second quarter in mine, yeah, right, but I'm go. Still figuring out Darvin. No, who cares about mine? Darvin, I want to figure out Darvin's. Yeah. Get out of here.
Well, this is where too, right? It's just like these games that are coming up as more dress rehearsals, they will give us more insight into what things are going to look like, right? When you know that LeBron is only going to play 18 minutes or 19 minutes, and he's only going to play two shifts. Well, then guess what? I'm going to give him a 10-minute shift and a 9-minute shift. And then that's that, right? It's going to be different when you're like, okay, well, I'm mapping out a 35-minute game for LeBron James and a 36-minute game for Anthony Davis and a 32-minute game for Russell Westbrook. What do those patterns actually look like, right? Or 28 minutes for Russ or 22 minutes for Pat Bev or 20 minutes for Dennis Schroeder. How do I find 24 minutes for Austin Reeves? Do I want, who is going to be a 4-shift player versus a 3-shift player? Do we have any 2-shift players on this team that we think that's what their role is going to be? There hasn't been a single game yet this preseason that has allowed Darvin to institute a map like that. Now, I know that they have iteration after iteration after iteration of that stuff on whiteboards at the facility, and they've had countless conversations about that as coaches, but practically putting it into place during a game, that has not happened yet, Mike. And so these last two games are going to give him that first chance, because in theory, everyone but Troy Brown is going to be available at this point.
One of the things that Milwaukee was kind of known for too was not playing their stars a ton of minutes, with Giannis in particular. So when you said a LeBron 35-minute night and an AD 36-minute night, I wonder, are those 32-minute nights? Maybe we need them to play the 35 and 36 to win, but I do wonder how much that's part of Ham's philosophy. Part of the fun of analyzing the team on a day-to-day basis and seeing where we're going with this. I'm just having a blast discussing all of this. We'll be back tomorrow, talk a little bit more. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double team. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points, 16 rebounds, Shaq with his 8th block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal! Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane, back for Gasol, ready pass, and it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant, picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one, miss it! Bryant,
for the victory. It's over.
And shot clock now to 5. Bryant, yeah!
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.